This is a panel discussion, and the people who make up the most important people on the panel are you people sitting out here in the audience. There's a microphone set back, halfway back down the aisle there. For any of you who would like to make comments or responses, please line up at the microphone, and we'll get to you as quickly as we can. I'd like to start off the panel discussion. I think we'll ask Bryce to give us his opinion on alcohol, drugs, and AA's future. Well, let's use this microphone here, if we could, please.
I think I'll sit down and make a smaller target. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Bryce Peacock.
Hi, Bryce.
On the one hand, it's kind of presumptuous to think that we're going to assure AA's future here today. But on the other hand, that's exactly what we're going to do. At meetings just like this all over the world, we're going to do our part towards assuring AA's future. Prior to the meeting, I was reading something that probably didn't seem to me like to pertain to the question of Alcoholics Anonymous and drugs, or drug abuse, or drug addicts, or dually addicted, or however many subtitles there are under that one title. And in just reading through the concepts, I came across a paragraph or two that seemed to apply. These concepts were written for a General Service Conference structure by Bill Wilson after 1951. Or at about that time, 1951. I'm not sure when they were written, or this particular one was written. And a couple of paragraphs that caught my attention were talking about, in concept one, talking about the ultimate, the final responsibility and ultimate authority for AA World Services should always reside in the collective conscience of our whole fellowship. That is us. We are it. We are the people who make up the groups who provide the group conscience, to provide the leadership, to provide the servants to go to the General Service Conference and debate and decide on which literature we will use throughout the fellowship. And the paragraphs that they're talking about here, perhaps many of us are still vague about what the group conscience of Alcoholics Anonymous, about what it really is. And the second paragraph talks about, it has always been the hope of democratic nations that their citizens would always be enlightened enough, moral enough, and responsible enough to manage their own affairs through chosen representatives. But in many self-governing countries, we're now seeing the inroads of ignorance, apathy, and power-seeking upon democratic systems. Their spiritual resources of right purpose and collective intelligence are waning. Consequently, many a land has become so helpless that the only answer is dictatorship. Next paragraph. Happily for us, there seems to be little prospect of such a calamity in AA. The life of each individual and of each group is built around our 12 steps and 12 traditions. We very well know that the penalty for extensive disobedience to these principles is death for the individual and dissolution for the group. Dissolution. An even greater force for AA's unity is the compelling love that we have for our fellow members and for the principles upon which our lives today are founded. That was true then when Bill Wilson wrote that, and that is definitely true today. Some of the things that go on at AA groups, which we find George identified as the controversy, there are a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous today who seem to think that's a new phenomenon. It isn't. It's been with us ever since the fellowship was founded or organized or put together June 10th, 1935. Right away, we started having people who were different come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And their differences were threatening to those of us who were already here. Your differences are threatening to me since I was already here, and I'm sure my differences when I came in was a threat to those who were already there when I first went to Group 2 16 years ago. The question of drug abuse, Alcoholics Anonymous, and drug abuse Like I said, is not new, and it will not fade from discussions like this. We'll do our part to decide how we individually think about it. And so I will give you how I individually think about it. I think Alcoholics Anonymous is big enough, is free enough to allow me in, and it's my responsibility to maintain that it is big enough and free enough to allow you in. If you want to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're welcome to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. Our third tradition is very explicit about the requirements for membership. You must have a desire to stop drinking. And you're the only person who can decide whether you have that desire to stop drinking. I certainly can't make that decision for you, and I can't get into your head to see if you have that desire, because you may have it today and not have it tomorrow. And I may have it today and not have it tomorrow or next week. And I certainly wouldn't want you deciding when I no longer have that desire. I'll try not to decide for you. You try not to decide for me. Now, over and beyond that, or after we look at the third tradition, and I wish George would have read the third tradition in the long form, because it goes on to explain that our fellowship ought never be exclusive in nature at any time. We ought not exclude anyone who seeks help with their drinking problem, with their problem with alcohol. And so that, it does more than suggest, it comes right out and says that at least drinking is part of the problem. If you're not an alcoholic, if you don't have trouble with alcohol, you don't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous, pure and simple. But there again, that's your decision, not mine. I belong here, and that's the only one I can decide for. The phrase that I hear quite often, and I've heard quite often in the last several years, is that these principles can help, these 12 steps can help anyone recover from anything. And that's certainly true, because these principles are not unique to Alcoholics Anonymous. They were borrowed from the Sermon on the Mount, the Bible, James, what's his name, the father of psychology, can't remember his last name, varieties of religious experience. Bill Wilson and Bob were both members of, Dr. Bob were both members of the Oxford groups, first century Christianity movement that was popular in the mid-30s. These principles as set up in the 12 steps are certainly not unique to Alcoholics Anonymous. We didn't invent them. They didn't invent them. They borrowed them from a lot of different places. And so these principles in these 12 steps can certainly help anybody in their life in any problem they have. Now, the rub seems to me comes about when I join with a group of other people. I must subvert my tendencies to decide for that group how everybody else should behave. When I came in, they subverted their tendencies to tell me how I should behave. They suggested that I read the book, try to apply the principles in my daily affairs, and that I would probably not have to drink again if I were conscientious and wanted sobriety and was willing to go to any lengths to get it and keep it. And beyond that, my work with my sponsor filled in some gaps that we talked about, things that we didn't talk about at the AA meeting. Gambling, infidelity, and other things that I won't go on. Nobody's interested. I'm not interested in if you're interested. So those are the kind of things that we talked about outside the group. In a one-to-one relationship with a sponsor. To get back, I keep losing this train of thought, but I want to get back to this, the fact that these principles will help anyone do anything they want. Help you lose weight and get elected president and you know, improve your sex life, all wrapped up in one. It's all true. But when I join with an AA group, when I go to an Alcoholics Anonymous group, part of my responsibility as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous is to be there and present the message to whoever is there, theoretically newcomers. Alcoholics who suffer are not necessarily newcomers. They may be old-timers. who have had a lapse of memory. And my responsibility as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous is to present this message by sharing my experience, strength, and hope with them. That A, it is possible to not drink on a daily basis using the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and joining in a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there's a vast difference between the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as epitomized by the lady who read the portion of the fifth chapter, which we hear at almost every meeting. There's a big difference between the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are a lot of people who read that big book and study it and don't go to AA meetings and stay sober. There are a lot of people who incorporate those principles and those 12 steps in their lives and don't belong to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my hat goes off to them. My choice is to belong to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a democratic fellowship. I can belong as long as I want to. I can go to as many meetings as I want to. I can go to as little meetings as I want to. I can incorporate these principles as much as I want to, as little as I want to, as much as I'm able to, whatever. I decide my own destiny based in concert with my higher power, which I choose to call God. I cannot enter the kingdom of sobriety with somebody on my back or on somebody's back. The person who works the 12 steps and makes the effort gets the benefit. That's the law. There is no other way. You cannot enter the kingdom of sobriety on my back. I can't carry you in here. I can share with you my experience, strength, and hope. And I think it's my responsibility as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous to do that about the recovery from alcoholism based on these 12 steps. Now, if you and I were to meet at the Alamo Club or at Fellowship Hall or at Dee's Restaurant or someplace else and talk, most assuredly, we'll probably talk about money, sex, and power and my abuse of all of those and your abuse of all of those and how you found relief from the doldrums of trying to cut it a day at a time, married to some broad that don't understand you or some guy that doesn't understand you and blah, 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 like that. That'll surely be a topic of our conversation. It always has been with me. Whenever I meet somebody over coffee, that's what we end up talking about, money, sex, and power. But at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I feel it's my responsibility to share my experience, strength, and hope in my recovery from the drinking phase of alcoholism through the application of these principles, these 12 steps. And I feel somewhat cheated when other people don't accept that responsibility for themselves. I accept it for myself, and I encourage you to accept that for yourself, so that when you share your experience, strength, and hope, it's about recovery from alcoholism through the application of these 12 steps in your life. Now, I know that when I was first in AA, the first 4 or 5 years, I was not able to do that very well. I keep wanting to talk about people, places, and things that got in my way of staying sober. It was them, it was they. And I was tolerated and loved and encouraged to keep coming back. And I did all those things. I kept coming back, and pretty soon I learned how to love myself and love other people. And now I think it's my responsibility from this stage of my sobriety and my stage of my life that I become tolerant and loving of you. I encourage you to come back. I encourage you to apply these steps in your life. If you stand up, if you're one of those people who stand up and identify themselves as an alcoholic and an addict, or an addict and an alcoholic, I encourage you to keep coming back because you've already said you're an alcoholic. Therefore, if you're here, you must have the desire to stop drinking. I encourage you to come back because if you stay around long enough, you will become an alcoholic, pure and simple, and it'll be the end of that. It's my belief. Now, how you do, what you do with your free time, what kind of stuff you do, and that includes drugs, money, sex, and power, gambling, addiction to sex, addiction to money, and all of those other things. Geez, that's too bad. If you keep doing it, it'll probably lead you back to drinking. And I hope that doesn't happen for you or me, because it's certainly out there to happen for me anytime I forget my primary purpose. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know when it becomes your responsibility to see that the group exists. I don't know when that happens. I'd like to have a little chart say, well, after you've been in X number of days, X number of months, X number of years, it then becomes your responsibility to ensure that AA, the future of AA, goes on, and you'll show up to make sure this message is carried. I don't know when that happens. Maybe it doesn't ever happen. And maybe I'm just dreaming that it's my responsibility. But I take it on, and I have a lot of empathy for people who insist that they're different. They're not. If you show up in an AA meeting, you didn't show up there by accident. I don't give a damn what your other addictions are. I have several. I'm clinging on to them as fiercely as I can. They are being torn from my grasp slowly but surely. And I'm sure you have other addictions which you cling to. And you're welcome to come to AA. And if you stay sober long enough, you'll probably get rid of them one day at a time. They'll cease. Either that or age will take over and you won't be able to do them. And that's okay, whichever comes first, you know, the willingness to give up the addiction or the age that you no longer do it. I don't know. Since I'm now getting up in age, I think age is doing it for me. And that's all right. I'll take relief no matter how it comes. And my relief has come for the past 16 years through attendance at Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and sharing with people who have found a way to stay sober one day at a time through the application of these principles. And I would like to do everything I can to ensure that that goes on, because I would like you to get it like I got it, spoon-fed, forced-fed by AA members and people who love me enough to tell me that I didn't need to drink if I didn't want to, if I would do these certain things. Thanks. You can use this one, I'll get you close to me. Come on.
I'm Jennifer, and I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. And I just, maybe I missed the point, but I was just, my question to you is it that you feel like when you're outside of a meeting, you can discuss your drug addiction with others, but as long as you're at a meeting, you should only talk about alcoholism and your drinking problem. And that's my question.
Well, I think it would be very inappropriate at an AA meeting to discuss my addiction to gambling, my compulsion with women, my problems with food. I just think that doesn't have any bearing on the fact that step one begins when I admit that I'm powerless over alcohol and my life is unmanageable. The unmanageability of my life includes my addiction to gambling, food, and women, or compulsions in those areas. I don't think that has any bearing on, or it would be inappropriate for me to discuss that in an AA meeting. I make this judgment. I think it would be inappropriate for you to talk about snorting coke. I tried coke once, and the bubbles made me sneeze, so I had to give it up. So I don't see what that's got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, the primary purpose, and the tie-in with the third tradition, and our primary purpose, for AA members, is a desire to stop drinking. That's all I'm saying. Is it doesn't seem to be appropriate. If you stick around long enough, I think you'll give that up. Maybe you'll just become an alcoholic. You won't have to be an addict. I don't know. Well, I spent a lot of time avoiding the issue.
Ann L., would you like to say a few words to this, please?
My name is Ann, and I'm an alcoholic.
I am.
You know, when I hear about these kind of things coming up, I think, oh, good, I'm going to get involved in that. And then I get up here and I don't get to see the back of anybody's head, and I think, oh, why'd I do this again? You know, I like sitting out there where I can see the back of people's head, and then I don't have to get up here and give my opinion. Several months ago, somebody gave me an excellent article. I wish I had brought it. I didn't know for sure until last night that I was going to be on this panel. The man is a delegate from Kentucky, and the article, the name of it is The Traditions Drew the Line a Long Time Ago. And I have to agree with what he said in this article. He said that with the growth of the treatment centers, that in some subtle way we have allowed the treatment centers to define how our Alcoholics Anonymous meetings are going now. And he said that in treatment centers that alcohol is lumped in with all drugs. And I don't have any argument, you know, that alcohol is not a drug. But I believe that the name Alcoholics Anonymous is very specific on what drug we're here to deal with. And so when I thought maybe I was going to be on this panel, I am a firm believer in the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been around the fellowship a while, and I study the traditions a lot. And I'm always in my book, The 12 and 12, and as you can see, I have it here with me. So I figured that if I got to be on this panel, that I was going to stick strictly to the traditions. Otherwise, I was going to be mowed down, you know. And so in my research on this, tradition 3, I believe, is very, very definite about the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And in tradition 3, it talks about when, in the early days, you still had to apply for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you had to be voted upon whether you could join or not. And it says that they had a member come, and he wanted to belong to this group. And he said, let me get this. Anyway, he said that he had another addiction, which was even worse to society than alcoholism. And so they met, and they were deciding whether they were going to vote and let him in. And so they did allow him in. And it said that he became a very, very valued, I'm really nervous, and this is unusual for me, that he became a very valued member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he did a lot of 12 steps with other alcoholics. But I believe on page 142 of Tradition 3, he gives us a very clear thing of what happened when they let this new person in who had this other addiction that was even more stigmatized than alcoholism. And it said never did he trouble anyone with his other difficulty. And I think that gives us a very strong message, you know, kind of like what Bryce said. We all come in here. I kind of laugh when someone stands up and says, I'm an alcoholic and duly addicted, and I think only two addictions? How lucky you are. You know, I wish I only had two addictions or compulsions. I, too, have some other things I have to deal with. But when I come into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I have to remember one thing. Out of a 24-hour day, I go to a meeting for 1 hour a day. I would like to be able to go into that meeting for that 1 hour and hear, talk, and help offered to me for that one thing that we're supposed to be gathered together for. Our name is very specific, Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's the one thing we should be gathered for. I'm finding as I go to meetings that I'm having trouble sorting out where the talk is about alcohol and the causes and effect of it. I talked to a gentleman, I believe he was from Phoenix, and he was here a year ago, and he went to a meeting down at the Alano Club. And as I remember, he said he was fairly new last year when he was here, and he went to that meeting, and he said, you know, I came out of that meeting, I was very confused exactly what kind of a meeting it was. He said there was a collection of everything and everyone in there talking about everything. And he said, I honestly did not know if I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He came back this year, and he decided, well, he would try that meeting again. Maybe he had grown, and he would be able to sort it out. He went to that meeting, and he said the same thing happened. But he's grown enough where he didn't have the same reaction that he did last year. So I think a tradition three, when it says, never did he trouble us with his other difficulty, gives us a pretty good idea. And in tradition five, it's our we carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And the very first line says, "Shoemaker, stick to thy last. Better do one thing supremely well than many badly." Again, I have to go back to the idea, you know, that I have many problems. I love talking to people on the outside. That's probably where I get most of my help from. I get my identification in the meeting. When I go to that meeting for 1 hour, I know I'm in the right place because I am an alcoholic and I have to have that identification. Outside of the meeting probably is where I get my health, and that's where I certainly get my growth, because I cannot stay sober, you know, for just by going to one meeting in 24 hours. That's not how I stay sober. But I do need that identification. It says in Tradition 5 that we cannot keep the precious gift of sobriety unless we give it away. In that 1 hour of meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the only thing I have to give away to you, is what it used to be like, what happened, what it's like now. If I can give you anything on how I'm staying sober, I'm going to do it, and I hope you'll do that with me too. If I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I hear about somebody snorting or shooting or toking or that kind of thing, that doesn't help me with my problem of alcoholism. I mean, alcoholism has to be wet and alcohol has to be wet and swallowed, you know, and that's what I'm there for. If I go into a meeting where they let somebody from Overeaters Anonymous in our AA meetings, I'm sorry, friends, I cannot identify and get help with my problem of alcoholism by listening to somebody stuff a Twinkie down their throat. You know, it just doesn't work. I need the identification with the alcohol. But my very favorite one, and I believe, for myself at least, and I have to say that, these are just my opinions, and I know that you all probably feel that way. Tradition 6, I believe, is very definite. And see, the thing of it is, if you want to talk to me on the outside about this thing, I'm more than happy to talk to you about it. But it's like I knew today, if I came in here with just my opinions based on my emotions, that I would leave myself open to every argument there is, and there's arguments on every side. But our traditions came about for a very good reason, and that was to protect Alcoholics Anonymous. And they saw early on that if we didn't have something like this, that we weren't going to last any better than the Washingtonians did. And they grew much faster and got stronger and larger than Alcoholics Anonymous did. But how many in this room know anything about them? And so it was because of things like that that the traditions were written. In June, I was Frank Mauser, who is the archivist from General Service Offices in New York City, was here. And I had the privilege of driving him several places, so I got to talk to him about this. And being as he does work in GSO in New York City, he gets to see the whole effect of this, you know, much more strongly than any of us. And he said that there is a real danger to Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, if our traditions are continuing to be eroded away as they're being done now. And he said, we're going to be meeting next month in Montreal for our 50th anniversary. And he said, if people don't start speaking up, he said, we will not be meeting again in X number of years. Because people's attitude is, well, we will let these other things into our meeting. What can it hurt? And like he said, it can hurt. We can get so watered down we won't recognize ourselves. But on the sixth tradition, it's that we ought never endorse finance and on. But it says the moment we saw that we had an answer for alcoholism, it was reasonable, or so it seemed at the time, for us to feel that we might have the answer to a lot of other things. Here are some of the things we dreamed. And it talks about the hospitals, that the hospital didn't want us alcoholics in there. They didn't know what to do with us, so they dreamed that they would build, you know, a lot of hospitals, and then that would give alcoholics work also. And we wouldn't have to end up in jail and under the custody of courts and all that. But it's very definitely mentioned in Tradition 6, some of the things that we dreamed. We'd spill AA into the dark regions of dope addiction and criminality. we'd form groups of depressive and paranoid folks. The deeper the neurosis, the better we'd like it. It stood to reason that if alcoholism could be licked, so could any problem. And then it went on to talk about what happened when they started trying to follow through on some of these dreams. And as we all know, they had to go back to our primary purpose, and that was to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. These adventures implanted a deep-rooted conviction that in no circumstances could we endorse any related enterprise, no matter how good. We of Alcoholics Anonymous could not be all things to all men, nor should we try. So I agree with a delegate from Kentucky that the traditions drew the line a long, long time ago. For anyone who stands up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and feels it necessary for them to say, I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, I too believe that that alcohol is a drug. And so I'm very curious, if you believe that, why you have to stand up and say, I am an alcoholic and an addict. Isn't that rather redundant? Isn't that the same as saying, I'm an addict and an addict? I believe it goes back to being unique, and I think each of us in some way strives to be unique, and eventually we come to believe that we're all the same. We're just different individuals. Like I said, I've been around the fellowship for a long time, and I've seen meetings change, and I can't say that these changes are for the good. Unfortunately, our success rate, I believe, is dropping. I don't like to see that, because that means there's alcoholics who are going back out there still suffering. But I have to put it on a personal basis. If you have a problem with drugs, you can go to Narcotics Anonymous. If you have a problem with gambling, you can go to Gamblers Anonymous. If you have a problem with sex, you can go to Sexaholics Anonymous. If you have a problem with eating, you can go to Overeating Eaters Anonymous. But for those of us who want to deal with our alcoholism, if our AA meetings get so watered down with all of our other compulsions and addictions, where do we go? I don't have any place else to go other than Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Are there any questions or responses from the audience? Could you line up the microphone down there? We're taking the session.
I'm Mo, and I'm an alcoholic.
I
sat here and listened to this, and you know, it brings back, I think where this problem arises is that in many of your treatment centers, which I've been a constant visitor and patient, is that they stress that there is no difference between drugs and alcohol. I think back in the day when Alcoholics Anonymous was first formed or become of age, was alcohol was primary, the biggest offender. It was never introduced to me that drugs, I thought a drug addict was a damn fool. I didn't think an alcoholic was, because he was different. But it's been taught to me, and I'm getting to be quite an old man, it's hard to teach an old man anything, but there is basically no chemical difference between alcohol and the mind-changing drugs that we speak of when we say a drug. And I go along with this young lady that just spoke, that if you are a drug addict, you have the same problems as the alcoholic, but you don't call it alcoholism, you call it drug addiction. I think it would be easier if we could all just say, well, we're all a bunch of cuckoos when we come here for help. Now, I don't advocate a change in AA because, boy, it saved my life, so I wouldn't suggest that we do anything to change the rules and regulations. But somehow I have a feeling in our group that these people that come in, we have some of them that say, I am an alcoholic and a drug addict, because they want to belong. They want to have the help that we have to offer them. And this drug addiction thing throws the old alcoholic off his beam a little. But I can't see any difference in a person. Like I know here, I think it's basically in the younger generation that have been exposed more to drugs. In my day, drugs were not available. Had they been, I'm sure that I would have been an alcoholic and a drug addict. So I wonder if somehow we can accept these people, and do you suppose that it will come about that they will be welcome? I know we're here for that reason, to get the feeling of people. And the program has been so successful that it seems almost a shame to think that maybe we would have to cast aside these people that desperately need help. Thank you.
I'm Allison. I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hi,
Allison. Oh, I don't know about this. As far as I can understand, the drug addict, if you want to just say the plain drug addict, if they come into our meeting, they are welcome. Anybody is, especially to an open AA meeting, anyone is welcome to attend our meetings. And if they come in and they have a dual addiction, and I have more than one addiction too, if they come in and have a dual addiction, but one of their addictions is alcohol, and they're at an Alcoholics Anonymous to deal with that particular thing, this is just my own feeling and opinion, but when I go to an AA meeting, I want to go there because I'm an alcoholic. If I go to an OA meeting because I'm an overeater, I don't get up in that meeting and say, I'm Alice, I'm a grateful alcoholic, and a food addict or whatever. You see, I go to that meeting to deal with my problem with food. I would come to AA to deal with my problem with alcohol. I had a real wise sponsor when I first came, well, not right at first, but as I got into the program, and I had all these things, all these big problems that I didn't know what to do with. And he told me if I would just take Alcoholics Anonymous and those steps and deal with alcoholism, if that was my primary problem, you know, which at that time, you know, that's what I dealt with, that 80% of these other things, like what Bryce was saying, would take care of themselves. If I would just take this program and work on my alcoholism and work on those steps and put them into my life, that these other things would take care of themselves. And, you know, I had a hard time believing him right at first because I had so many things weighing me down, I thought. But it was true. You know, that has happened for me. I still have things that I work on a daily basis besides alcoholism, you know. But because, you know, I work on my alcoholism and I use those steps in my life, these other things get taken care of. But I don't have to go to an AA meeting and say that I'm an overeater and that I'm grateful for this program, that I can use it for that too. You know, because I can, but that's not what I'm there for. Like if you want, he also gave me this, and I really love it. You know, if you want to buy shoes, you don't go down to the furniture store. You know, if you want to find somebody to put bricks on your house, you don't go where they don't sell bricks or have bricklayers to do it. You know, we come to AA because of our alcoholism, and alcoholics and addicts and whoever is welcome at our meetings. And if you have a problem with alcohol and you have a desire to stop drinking, that's what those traditions are for. But I'm a real firm believer in the traditions and in this program, and I'm willing to stand up for it, you know, because this is my life you're talking about, and it's real personal to me, you know. And I'm not saying to keep these people out, because I love these people, just as much as I do anybody else. And these people are just, you know, like, I know lots of people that are dual addicted, you know, and they're good friends of mine. But when they come to an AA meeting, they're an alcoholic. When they go to an NA meeting, they're at an NA meeting, you know. And they also have, I haven't been to their open NA meeting yet. I guess I should go see what that's all about, but I imagine it's almost all about what AA is all about, only to deal with that addiction. I can't relate to taking acid. I can't relate to smoking pot or snorting coke or any of those kind of things. And I don't know what they do to you. And I don't want to, you know? And so when I go to a meeting and that's what they talk about, I walk out being confused. And maybe it's a drug is a drug, but alcohol was my drug. See? And that's what I deal with. And I'm a real firm believer in it.
My name is Ron, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Ron.
And they're the same thing. Only, I say it because some people relate to me, and some people don't. And it's simple as that. In the book, the A Big Book, it says the same thing. There's a chapter there, one of the stories, and it says, Doctor, Alcoholic Addict. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I can relate to that gentleman in there, and I can relate to many of the stories in the Big Book. There are some stories I can't. There are some stories that are really different than me, and I am different than everybody here, but I am the same as everybody here. Daniel Webster defines the word fellowship as equals and friends. And that's exactly what we are. We are equals. And we're not equals in the past because we've all come a different path here. Not one of us has followed the exact same steps to get here. But we're equal in the solution because we have to follow the exact same steps in order to stay sober, to find a higher power. And that's what I come to these meetings for. It's like I heard, well, meetings should only be for sharing about alcohol. And I guess somebody should have told the committee who organized this, because I'm looking down here at all of the marathon meetings, and only one of them, this particular meeting right now, has the word alcohol in it. We're talking about loneliness and isolation. What does that have to do with alcohol? My gosh, self-honesty. What are the promises? Resentment. Surrender. Self-knowledge. Those are the things that are on this list. And those are the meetings I go to, and I have been to learn about myself. And I hear people telling me about myself when they share their stories. I see part of me in almost everybody that speaks, every single person that speaks. And it doesn't matter, like yesterday at this, in this room, there were two gentlemen speaking. And one was a corporation vice president, and he came through the doors of these rooms as a vice president. And the other one came through the doors as through the doors of a prison. But they were equal, and we're all equal, because we have the same solution. And I go to both fellowships, but I don't have two gods. I have one God, and he's the God that I find in this room. And he's the God that I found through this fellowship. But I have a story, and that story is the only thing I have, and it's the only thing I can share. And that story is riddled with both alcohol and drugs. And if I share my story, I have to share both of it. I have to share me. And I can't say, I'm sorry, let's see, I'll exclude this part of me, and this part of me, and this part of me, because the steps tell me that I have to get rid of everything. And if I follow the steps, I have to do that. If I follow this program, I have to do that. And I have to follow this program or I'm going to die. It's just as simple as that. My life's unmanageable. And for me, they're equal because I've gone out and used because of alcohol and I find I'm using everything, and I've gone out and used because of drugs and I find out I'm using everything. I use a combination. And gosh, I don't want to use anymore. It's just simply that I don't want to use anymore. And so I have to come to these meetings. I have to go to a meeting every day, at least one. And I have to share. And I have to share me. And I can't say, hey, this is, you know, I can't exclude me. I can't divide me up and say I can only share this part. But hopefully, if you listen, there'll be something for everybody. And I don't have the answers for everybody. I mean, I get a teeny thing, maybe one phrase from one speaker, and I get another phrase from another. And that's how I hear God in these meetings. And I don't hear one individual get up. I've been told that if I stick around long enough, I'm going to hear my story. I haven't heard it completely yet. I've heard close.
Go ahead. Hi, my name is Rich Stanfield, and I am an alcoholic.
All right.
You know, each side or each opinion has a lot of validity to it, but I've never met or heard anything mentioned about open or closed meetings. I am a GSR for a group in a recovery center here in Salt Lake City. And so I'm very involved with this AA group that we have up here. We get a lot of people in through that. And a lot of them are confused. And number one, I go to that AA meeting up there to stay sober. And then number two, which helps in my sobriety, is to carry that message. And we introduce these inpatients to Alcoholics Anonymous. We're not in competition with the treatment facility or anything else like this. We have made it a point to make those two meetings that we have up there as open meetings for anyone interested. But we do have to follow the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have to take a group inventory every once in a while in our business meetings to remind us of what our primary purpose is, from what I've heard discussed here today. We do, in those open meetings, allow people consider themselves dual addicts to go ahead and tell those stories. Because myself personally, I can understand, how in the hell can you tell your stories without getting into the whole thing? What it was like, what happened, and what we're like now is a part of my recovery, and it's a part of others' recovery. And I think if drugs were prevalent back in the 1930s, that as alcohol was or is then, we would have a different name today. It would be Narcotics Anonymous instead of Alcoholics Anonymous. So at that time, when it was supposed to be, this program got started through numerous miracles. I mean, you know, the 10th phone call and little things like this, and so happens that we are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm a member of this, I don't know what to call it. It's not an organization or whatever. I'm a member because I say I am. And it makes me feel a part. But I do have to remember one thing, that it is Alcoholics Anonymous. I am primarily a virgin alcoholic. I did not get into other drugs, okay? So I can understand when I hear another individual get up here and say, I cannot identify with somebody what their mind goes through and what great lengths or whatever they have to go through to find their drugs, whether they be prescription or not. But by God, I can identify with somebody that's looking around for a bootlegger at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and that's me. But getting back to the group, you know, we really have to adhere to those traditions very carefully, make a thing, because we are representatives of Alcoholics Anonymous right there in that treatment facility. And we have to remind these people gently But, you know, just gently and carefully, that this is Alcoholics Anonymous, because we do hear a lot of both of it. So I think it's very important for us as a group up there to really adhere to those traditions. Even though those other people are very, very welcome and they're loved up there.
Thank you very much, Rich.
Is it okay?
Questions, right? Yeah, we'd like to limit this to questions.
This is not a speaker's meeting.
We have three more people to get through up here, and we'd like to...
May I just make this brief?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. I'm Carolyn. I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hi, Carol.
You asked a very important question. I don't know if it was merely rhetorical or, you know, it was something that you really wanted answered, but why would I state my identity redundantly as an alcoholic addict? The reason is because I know that in order to get any amount of sobriety, I can't drug either. It's for myself alone that I state that I'm an alcoholic addict. It's for nobody else. I think that we need to be real careful about being exclusive here, because I know that primarily I am an alcoholic, but I got in through the back door, and that was through drugs, because my father was an alcoholic and I was never going to be an alcoholic. You know, so I did drugs instead. By the same token, I can understand the other argument, because in order for my father to accept treatment in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he is very chronic, he wouldn't want to be messing around with those drug addicts. So we need to be real careful about making this too big an issue. We need to find a middle ground. We've taken this and gone to extremes with it. And it's really not important. As far as I'm concerned, it's the same difference as artificial snow or natural snow. It's the same stuff. That's all. Thank you.
Can I say just one thing before we go on to Julie? I kind of get the feeling that people are saying that the drug scene that we're experiencing now is a very new thing. And hang on, folks, I got to tell you this. Bill W. had little old Lois on LSD before a lot of you in this room were born. So I think probably the question came up at that time. And that's maybe one reason why our traditions were set up. It's not a new thing.
Thank you. We'll have time for more questions. My name is Julie. January 25th, 1984 is my sobriety date. I am an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Julie.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. As far as the future of Alcoholics Anonymous is concerned, about the only thing that I can contribute is being the very best Julianne Erickson that I can be today. And that involves working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in conjunction with not drinking any alcohol or using any mind-altering substances, and having constant communication with my higher power, which is I choose to call God. And that is also a gift that I received upon entering this fellowship. Now, this is a pretty hot issue, and my brain, diseased as it is, would love to go on a semantic tour of intellectualism. That is one of my greater character defects. So rather than do that, I will share with you a personal experience. When I came into this program, I couldn't do it quite by going to meetings. I had to enter a treatment center. They had to teach me how to not drink and how to live and get through 24 hours each day, and that included things like going to bed and eating and brushing my teeth. I'd forgotten. When I left the treatment, I continued to attend only Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in my first year, and I really didn't give drugs any thought. When I started craving some kind of a nameless pill to alter my consciousness on bad days, I became concerned. And at that point, I shared with some people and started attending the other 12-step program of Narcotics Anonymous. And there I found that people talk about alcoholism and they talk about drugs and they work the same 12 steps as we do in this program. They don't have the luxury of open and closed meetings like we do in this fellowship. And I do agree with what was said earlier, that in an open Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, people are inclined to say damn near anything. A lot of the newcomers probably won't be as gutsy to attend a closed AA meeting and start talking about drugs. I've seen that very rarely since I've been here. And if they should do that, those people with a good program would probably be inclined to take that person aside after the meeting and suggest that maybe they shouldn't talk about drugs. Maybe they should talk about alcohol if someone was bothered. That's just one of my thoughts. What has happened to me as I attended Narcotics Anonymous meetings, I was sharing that with my family. Now, it just so happens that I have a younger brother who has used drugs for a number of years. He may kill me for this, but I'm going to break his anonymity. He came in through Narcotics Anonymous, and I didn't say anything to him when he suggested that 15 years of pot use made him an addict and that after he got his life a little straightened out, he could drink socially. You know, he caught on after a while, and now he attends both programs. He is an addict alcoholic. That's his choice. My father thinks alcoholics are far more interesting than Al-Anon people, so he attends AA meetings. My mother, who is still drinking and in a fog, doesn't know what's going on, so she goes wherever she's told. For those of you that are interested, you'll meet the whole family tonight. We'll be sitting together. Yes. I love this fellowship more than I love life itself, because without you people, I wouldn't be here. And even though the arguments and differences of opinion get my blood stimulated, as long as we all realize that we're here for the same thing, then, you know, I think our sanity is better restored. I went to the spring rally in St. George this past year, and I listened to the speaker, Sean A., talk about how he identified himself as an alcoholic addict for a long time in AA and decided that he didn't need to be different, and he dropped the addict part and identified with just the disease of alcoholism, even though he's used both. And I really appreciated that, and it made a lot of sense to me. And being one that wanted to just, you know, be accepted and not be special anymore, I thought that's right on. And I had this nagging thing in my gut that wouldn't go away after I made that decision. And I looked around and listened for a while and realized that the problem with me doing that is that I really like old people and I really like kids and I like everybody else in the middle. And the kids that come in don't use just alcohol. In fact, a lot of them have never used it at all, and they come to AA programs because that's where the sobriety is. And they can relate to me when I say I'm an alcoholic and an addict, even though it may be a bit redundant. And I would rather have them relate to me than not. It's an unfortunate matter that, you know, under 2 years of sobriety, I'm kind of a senior member of NA. That's not much sobriety. And so at each opportunity, I encourage my friends in the other program to come to AA meetings and listen and participate, because that's where the sobriety is, and that's where people are making it. And I also encourage people in AA that listen to me to attend an NA meeting, too. It's a good experience. The only difference between NA and AA is that they're just a little more relaxed in NA, and they laugh a little more, and they hug a lot more. But other than that, we're all talking about the same things. Thank you for the opportunity to let me share my feelings. And if you have any questions, fire away.
Hi, I'm Russ, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Russ.
I got other addictions, too, but I won't say them today because it's a meeting. I've heard quite a bit about this, and I've been in the program a few years. I can recall back about 12 years ago, I was at it sitting in an AA meeting, and a gentleman come in and he said his name is Bill S. He was an addict, alcoholic. And he put the addict first. And, oh, man, I come unglued. And I had a sponsor by the name of, he said I could break his anonymity, Bill Clinch. And I says, hey, I said, this is an AA meeting. Let's get that addict shit out of here right now. Bill turned to me and he says, you're putting principles before personality. And I looked at him and I said, "You son of a bitch, you're fired." I got up and walked out. You know what happened? I got drunk. And I was past DCM there in Nebraska, and I got attended a Narcotics Anonymous meeting one time. And I didn't know about these drugs too well, but there was somebody up there who said you couldn't identify with things. I identified with the speaker that night. He had been taking Bennies. He was an ex-carny, and he'd been taking Bennies. And I sat there, and all of a sudden I says, "I took them son of a bitches. I didn't know they was drugs." And I sat there, and finally he says, "You got anything to say, Russ?" And I got up there, and I says, "Yeah, I took Bennies down in Alabama. I called a state patrolman a dirty bastard because he came up and asked me what was the matter. I stopped in the middle of the highway. I seen a jet airplane." And he says, the state patrolman says, "What's the matter with you, buddy?" And I said, "You dirty son of a bitch, don't you see that jet airplane?" He says, "Follow me." Went down the road, put me up in a motel. Well, that kind of opened my eyes a little bit, and I come back to Grand Island, Nebraska, and I went back and I hired my sponsor back again. I says, "I think you know what you're talking about, Bill." And he says, "Good. So today, if a person comes into the program of Alcoholic Anonymous, introduces himself as so-and-so, alcoholic and addict, I don't sit there and take his inventory. Because that individual, like I was, I went to alcohol because it was cheaper. The drugs cost too damn much money, and I wasn't a very wealthy man. And so I didn't go to drugs, but I went to alcohol because I could get a bottle of wine for something back in them days for 50 cents, and I stayed on that. But today, I can understand the addict a little bit. And also, I heard, when I first walked in the room today, I heard somebody say something about he's a junkie. Well, I was a bootlegger for a long time. I bootlegged whiskey, but I didn't make much profit because I drank it all up. And the addict, to me today, is I consider him my family, too. I don't go to NA because I'm not on drugs. But he is still my family. I will talk with that individual because one other thing I'd like to share with you. I have seen a person back in North Platte, Nebraska, come to an AA meeting. 15 of us told him to leave. And I was one of the 15 because he wasn't an alcoholic. That person, 3 weeks later, we buried him. And that is what opened my mind and my eyes up to that program. And the Washingtonians, if you remember, Bryce probably remembers him. He's been in long enough.
Just last week.
The Washingtonians, they was kind of a religious group. Well, they didn't go because they folded up. And I sure as hell don't want to see this program fold up because we're just alcoholics. Let's have the addicts in there with us, too. We need them. Thank you.
Let's reserve this for questions, please.
My name is Kevin. I am an alcoholic, and I am a drug addict, and my sobriety date is July 17th, 1984.
Hi, Kevin.
I qualify as both, but I was an alcoholic a long time before I found drugs. I started drinking. I'm like Julie. I feel that what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now qualifies it. I found alcohol, and I started using that. And when you're 14 years old, you can't bop down to the local 7-Eleven and get a six-pack of beer when you need a fix, but you can go to the local pusher in the high school and pick up drugs. And I found drugs that way because I could not get my alcohol fix. And that's where my drug dependency came in. It was a substitution. They talk about that in the big book. When I came into this program, I was a drug addict, not an alcoholic. But when I started reading the big book, I found out I was most definitely an alcoholic and a drug addict second. All I did was substitute my addiction with drugs because it was more available to me at the time. I don't want to get political, but in my recovery, I go to AA meetings and occasional NA. I've also found a lot of support in the young people's group because they understand the drug addicts there. We are all one and the same there, and I need that support. And I need the support of the AA group. I need the stability. NA is fine. They have a lot of things to offer to me. But I need the support, and I need the sobriety of the AA group because I am an alcoholic, and I'm just addicted to anything in life. And the more I come to these meetings, the more I get out of it. And all I can say is just, I open my arms to you. I hope you open your arms to me. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dave G., and I suffer from the disease of alcoholism.
Hi, Dave.
I really didn't know much about, well, when I've got 15 years of using drugs. I really didn't know what I had. I'd go to some meetings and I'd say I was an alcoholic. Other meetings I'd be an addict until I started reading the big book and I read Bill W.'s story. And then I understood. I had the exact same disease as he did, right down to a T. And I owe this fellowship my life. At least it saved my life. And when I first came into the program, I was brand new. I was up in a treatment center up here at the LDS hospital. And I didn't know what was going on. I'd been to quite a few AA meetings up there. And I'd felt a concern there, love. And I got a lot of knowledge out of that. And I went to a meeting uptown here, and they read this letter that said people with narcotic problems could not talk at the meeting. And that day, probably I needed a meeting more than any other time I could imagine. I couldn't get a hold of my sponsor. I must have called 20 people. I figured I'll go to this meeting. And I went there and I was turned down. I couldn't participate. I couldn't say anything. And the feeling I had was rejection. I felt humiliated because I was an addict. I wanted to go use. I damn near did. But by the grace of God, when I got back, I did get a hold of my sponsor. And the love that I'd felt from the other people I'd met in AA, Wayne and Don, I didn't go out. And I'm here standing alive today. And I love this program. And that's all I've got to say.
I'm Carl. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to jump in right here now because this is a good place for me to say what I wanted to say. First of all, the name of the game here today is Alcoholics Anonymous. In 1946, I walked into my first AA meeting and they kicked my ass out because I hadn't proved myself yet as an alcoholic to the manner satisfactory with those old timers. My sobriety date might possibly have been something like July 1946, but it was September 22nd, 1968. 17 years tomorrow, and it could have been 22 years longer than that. Now, I'm not talking about my sobriety. What I'm talking about here is a principle that we've all talked about, and I won't plow the ground that has been covered by other people. At least I'll try not to. I agree with everything everybody else has said, and I'll try to summarize my feelings. One of the things about my drinking, and George can remember this, when I came in here, I was fucked up. George laughed. So that's a gross understatement. George can remember what I was like when I came in here. I was a psychological mess with a hell of a lot of problems. Even after I'd been sober for a year and a half, the people at the University Alcoholism Clinic said, "Carl, you're still drinking." That was wrong. But my psychological problems were very severe, and I went to a psychologist for treatment of those. I came to AA for treatment of my alcoholism, and I've stayed sober. Now, if I piss some drug addict off, that's okay. I don't want you to go out and get high. I don't want you to go out and die. I don't want to do anything else. But this is a terribly emotionally charged issue, and the young man who spoke a few minutes ago about drugs, I respect everything you said. But we have NA for the narcotic addict, OA for the overeater, Emotions Anonymous for the people that have emotional problems, Sexaholics Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, and they all use the 12 steps. And to a certain extent, I guess the 12 traditions that came from AA, they all use our big book. But they use it for their special purpose. And by God, I feel that as alcoholics, we have a right and a duty to maintain at least a purity of purpose that is mentioned in our preamble. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But once again, like in tradition 3, the only requirement for a membership is a desire to stop drinking. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. We don't want the money of the drug addict or the overeater. We are alcoholics. Rockefeller told Bill Wilson that he wouldn't contribute to AA because AA should be self-supporting. It helped AA in its growth and its purpose. And a little bit later, the last sentence of the preamble, our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I won't go over the 12 traditions that were mentioned, but the 3rd, the 5th, the 6th, the 7th, the 10th, and the 12th have been mentioned today. And the 11th, when God was mentioned here a little bit ago. All of these things are important to all of us, but there's a time and a place for everything. No one program will solve all of our problems. We go to specific problems or specific programs for specific problems. At least I think so. I remember one day I went to a meeting of the Sandy group out there on 9th East, and there was an OA lady came in and she started to hog the whole meeting. Oh man. It was really something. And some new members in AA got so goddamn nervous, they were ready to go. So I took the bull by the horns and I said, "Lady, I appreciate your problem, but we've got some alcoholics here who are getting awful chancy and chomping at the bit to go out and drink. I'm going to ask you to be quiet and let them talk about their alcoholism problem." And she did this. Now, this may have caused a resentment in her part, and I don't care because that was the meeting for Alcoholics Anonymous. She had her own meeting that she could go to. We're talking about lives, emotions, and terrible disturbances that many of us have when we come into this program. But I've survived my emotional disturbances, and some of you who feel perhaps a little bit stepped on, you can survive yours. The treatment programs do not guide AA, as was mentioned by one of the other people. And talking about a man who was in this program and died a few years ago, a man who used to love resentments, little guy. He was one of the people that kicked me out of that first meeting I went to in 1946. And I respected that man like anything in the world. He taught me the basic principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, and George did, and some of these other old-timers in here. I got here about 3 months before Bryce did, but I think Bryce has had a hell of a lot more activity in the program than I have. And certainly, we've all held each other's hands over the years. We've had differences of opinions, friends, but we are still friends, best of friends. And that's what this whole program is all about. I'd like to just close my argument with this. We identify with people like ourselves, and in AA, our primary purpose is alcoholism. Thanks.
I'm Earl. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I'm an overeater addict. An emotional mess years ago, and I'm afraid that I have to challenge this young man that just spoke. I started drinking on November 5th, 1937, and stopped some 34 years later on October 26, 1971. But during that time, I got a little confused about this business of alcohol and drug addicts. I played 14 years of professional football. And the last year I played, I broke my neck, and I ended up living in a traction rig for 2 years. And during that time, my wonderful medical doctors prescribed 6 cans of beer a day for me and painkillers. So I was on a high for the 2 years I was in that rack, and my wife can attest that she's with me. After I got out of that rack and wore a brace for another 3 years on my neck and my back, they still prescribed beer and painkillers. So my life has always been intertwined with beer and drugs until I got myself sobered up. I started going to AA meetings 14 years ago, and I attend at least a couple of weeks now, even now. For a while I slipped away from them. Earlier, during this past year because I got tired of listening to bullshit about alcohol versus drugs. I happen to be a professional in the alcohol drug treatment business. I can't tell the difference between when people walk in my door, what in the hell they're on. And I can't tell the difference between them when I treat them. Their emotional complexities are the same. Their great needs are the same. There are some chemical things that are a little bit different, but emotionally, it's still hanging right in there. Now, it's true that there's a different cult between the two. Alcoholics are always suckers to loan drug addicts money. Okay? But you'll never see an addict loan anybody else any money. Okay? Because they'll keep it for themselves so they can get themselves a fix. Okay? And I think many people attest to that. I'd hate to think that we would disbar somebody who's in desperate need of talking if we could reach out and help them. Now, I absolutely sustain AA. That's the only thing that I teach in my program and the traditions. I'll not tell you who I'm with. But I want you to know that that program, in my opinion, is really the cure that I try to teach. It isn't the tools we give people for the short weeks they're with us. We tell them the real cure is going to be in AA meetings. So I try not to steer them away from AA meetings. So you'll have to get me aside and convince me to do something else.
I'd
because
like to do that
I
right
think
after
these
the
can...
meeting.
Pardon?
I'd like to do that right after the meeting.
Okay.
We called on Floyd Daly. We're running out of time, sir.
All right. Thank you.
My name's Floyd Daly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Floyd.
I like what I've heard here today. It's something that bothered me for a long time. I used to worry about AA. I heard people talk about the drug addictions are going to take over. I don't think anybody's got anything to worry about AA. AA's going to make it, in spite of us. And I don't understand the problems that people have determining what they are. I knew exactly what I was when I got there. You know, if I shot up 4 days a week and drank three, I would assume probably that I should go to NA. I don't think it's that tough of a problem to make. The only thing I feel, when I came into this program, I was given something through God, sobriety. And I got it through Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught how to live and what to do. And I owe something to this program that was installed in my head from the old-timers that taught me what to do and how to stay sober. And they're called the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't want to break them. I don't want to turn anybody away. I don't want anyone hurt. But I do think it's up to you as an individual to decide what you are and get there. You got the same help in AA as you got in NA. They're using the same principles. And I feel that no one is being shut out of getting help with whatever problem they have. But I can't understand why people can't make that decision as to whether they're an alcoholic or an addicted person of drugs. And I think that's the question that's up today. I'm not concerned about Alcoholics Anonymous making it. It made it. And as far as drugs are concerned, they're not new. Right under these streets, my father told me there's tunnels. In 1920s, the Japanese people in this community, or the Chinese, was these were opium dens under here. And that's exactly what was going on. So it's nothing new. When you walk through the door, you know, it's kind of like saying, you know, I'm a high-class drunk. I drank Chivas. And this guy drank wine, you know. What the hell's the difference? They had drugs in those days, as well as alcohol. Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who have a desire not to drink. If you have that problem, you're in the right place. If you don't, maybe you're not. And I was taught a long time ago, you know, this program is a self-weeding program. And things will work out. If you don't fix, you won't be here. You'll either do what's in the 12 steps. From my experience, you won't make it. And I don't care which comes first, the drugs or the alcohol. You have to change and you have to accept what's there. And it appears to me that maybe some people don't want to accept being an alcoholic in its own entity. And my feeling is, if you're not, go someplace else. If you are, sit down. Let's talk about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm Tim. I'm an addict. Plain out addict to any drug, alcohol including. So alcohol is a drug, though. It's a depressant. And I don't see what kind of other drugs you're on should make a difference in Alcoholics Anonymous. It helped me out a lot. It's the program I'm in. It's the form of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the same as Narcotics Anonymous. I feel it's the same thing between alcohol and drugs, because both of them are drugs. And I don't think if a person has a heroin addiction or an alcohol addiction, it's the same thing. They're both and the people, I don't know, maybe the old timers are kind of stubborn in their ways. But when they're gone, it's going to be the drug addicts that are going to take over. And alcoholics are going to be drug addicts because there's a lot of dual dependents. I'm one of them. That go to AA. I go to NA for support too. And there's people that go to both, and I think that's great. I don't think it should matter if you do pot every day or alcohol or both. It's the same thing. Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joe Clemens. I'd like to say something just a moment about the Washingtonians. The Washingtonians were in 1847, were they not? And they grew to over 300,000 members. And then they collapsed. They collapsed because they tried to be all things to all people. First off, there was one alcoholic talking to another. It started in Baltimore, Maryland. Dr. Milton Maxwell, who was chairman of the board of Alcoholics Anonymous, wrote his doctor's thesis on the Washingtonians. All right, they try to be all things to all people. They were telling the heroin people how to do it. They were telling the people that couldn't get along in their marriage how to do it. They were advising the financial road to travel for success. And then they were trying to be advisors to everybody. Then their downfall was advising you what to do politically. And they folded up. So AA has difficulty being all things to all people. As the gentleman up there said, the most generous people in the world are Alcoholics Anonymous. They give their 12 steps and their 12 traditions and their book to anybody that will go into the head office of New York and ask for them. May we use it? Yes. Sex Anonymous uses it. I don't belong to that, but I know they do very well with it. And this gentleman here mentioned a moment ago about old timers. What do they know about it? I know a lot more about being young than he knows about being old, I can tell you that. Well, and what he said, the closing of the preamble, we want to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. It doesn't say we want to help other alcoholics stop drinking, does it? We don't want to knock off your booze. The reason it says that sobriety doesn't have anything to do with liquor. It's a word of Latin origin that means my cup floweth over with knowledge. And that means you're getting knowledgeable about living in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as the world, as the years have gone by, they associate sobriety with being without booze, and that's not true. It means being knowledgeable about living. And that's why I came here. I was a hell of a drinker. There wasn't anything wrong with my drinking. I just couldn't live right, that's all. I forgot to go home for periods of 2 weeks at a time, and so I couldn't live right. But there was nothing wrong with my drinking. I was a high-class drinker, and I drove the others home, but I just couldn't live right. And so I had to get sobriety by the steps 12.
My name's Jack, and I'm a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. Christ, I've even got a membership card. If anybody wants to see it, it's right there. I won't try to impress you with what I do for a living because I don't want to put any barriers between you and me. I don't want to put any elevation. And I don't feel like I have a right to charge for what I got for nothing. But the topic of this panel I was asked to talk about, alcohol / drugs, the future of AA. And frankly, I'm not alarmed, I'm not scared, I'm not nervous because of guys like the one that just got up and the fact that we're having this meeting. But the purpose of this meeting, as I see it, and I'm just speaking for Jack Gleason, I'm not speaking for AA. The first tradition, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. The key is unity. That's what saved my life, is the unity. So I can understand why the NA people, the drug addicts, would come here. If I was a drug addict, I would lie about it to stay here, because this is where the multitudes are. And I have never seen anybody kicked out of a meeting. I'm sure it's happened, but... And the fourth tradition, to me, is each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Now, to tell you just how goddamn fragile this deal is, I'm on the panel. I was asked to talk because... I wanted to be sure that I didn't make a wrong impression to somebody. But I think that we go back to our groups from this meeting and have a look at it. Now, in my way of thinking, I haven't seen anybody here from NA trying to slip anybody from AA a drink. I haven't seen anybody from AA trying to slip anybody in NA a pill. I think we're going to be all right. Now, but what I see happening, as long as we hang on to these, and that's what we're doing now, and going back, each group being autonomous meaning self-sufficient, individual, each group has to be its group and stand in its entity. Now, I have heard a recent, this is an example, there's now, I belong to a stag group, used to catch a lot of flack for that. I think there's now 5 women stag meetings in this town. Still only 1 men's stag group. Now, the reason that there's 5